Follow along as we read from 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that ye remember me in all things, and keep the ordinances as I deliver them to you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head. For that is even all one as if she were shaven. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Judge in yourselves. Is it commonly that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Now in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not, that ye come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when ye come together in the church, I hear that there be divisions among you, and I partly believe it. For there must be also heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you. When ye come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in eating every one taketh before other his own supper, and one is hungry and another is drunken. What? Have ye not houses to eat and to drink in? Or despise ye the church of God and shame them that have not? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I praise you not. For I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered unto you, that the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat. This is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. After the same manner also, he took the cup when he had supped, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye as oft as ye drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, ye do show the Lord's death till he come. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily, eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened of the Lord, that we should not be condemned with the world. Wherefore, my brethren, when ye come together to eat, tarry one for another. And if any man hunger, let him eat at home, that ye come not together unto condemnation. And the rest will I set in order when I come.
I hope you're praying that the Spirit of Christ will be here as we examine our hearts, or should I say as we continue to examine our hearts, because that first message was definitely an examination of each of our hearts. Recently, in a series of messages, we had been studying problems at Corinth, problems of following certain ministers and cutting others down, problems of leaving the focus of the cross and following man-made philosophy. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the problem with the head covering. And today we want to look at the problem of the Lord's Supper. And actually, the Lord's Supper wasn't the problem. The problem was with the people who were to be eating the Lord's Supper. It's called the Lord's Supper because he was the one who initiated this doctrine in the upper room the night that he broke bread. So that's why it's called the Lord's Supper. It's also called in Jude, Feast of Charity. Jude there is describing the meaning of the supper. It's about our love, our charity for one another. And as you read 1 Corinthians 11, as we read it today, did you get the feeling that Paul is a little irritated? That he feels this supper has nothing to do with the Lord, and it has nothing to do with love? In verse 17, the word declare, I declare unto you. It's actually, in the Greek, the word command. Paul isn't stating opinion. He's kind of giving an order here. I also sense that some in Corinth were kind of proud of their actions at the Lord's Supper. They viewed what was going on as praiseworthy. They didn't view it as a problem. It was a praise. And notice how Paul mentions, I will not praise you. Verse 17. Now on this I declare unto you, I praise you not. Verse 22. What shall I say unto you? Shall I praise you in this? I praise you not. Corinthians, you feel that you aced a test. You want an A+ for your actions. Well, Paul says, I'm giving you an F. It's a failure. Here at Pleasant Hill, it's kind of hard to picture what's going on here. We come to our love feast. The food has been purchased beforehand from funds that everyone contributes at our general council offering. The deacons purchase the food. They cook the meal. They slice butter into even proportions. They divide the loaves of bread evenly. They put even proportions of soup into bowls. And then the deacons, with the help of the congregation, they put the same amount of the same food on every table. And then at around 6:15, we sit down together. And then later, we partake of the Lord's Supper together. So it's kind of hard to relate what Paul is so upset about here. To try to help us relate to this, what is happening here at Corinth, I'd like to ask you to picture a rather large gathering of extended family for a meal. Maybe it's an extended family reunion. And maybe you were told by your grandparents to meet at 5 o'clock for the meal. And everyone was to bring one hot and one cold dish. And you arrive at 4:45, and you see that some are already there. And you see a large table stretching from the dining room into the living room. At one end of the table, you see your dad sitting with your brother and his family. And your brother is a farmer, and your dad likes farming, and your brother has always been his favorite son. And you know that they're so busy talking about farming, they will probably not even notice you came in, and they don't. And you see that they're even almost finished with the meal. And at the other end of the table is your grandmother, with her or two of your cousins with their families. Now, grandmother always valued these two cousins highly. And so you're not surprised she is talking with them, laughing, eating, and drinking. And you and your family sit at the center chairs at the table. Your wife didn't bring any food because she was sick that day. And soon your sister arrives with her four children. Her husband had been killed a year ago. She is poor. There wasn't any food in the house, so she also came without food. And she and her family sit opposite to you. And you look to your right, and you look to your left. You see the food bowls are now empty. There is nothing left. And you feel discouraged. You're hungry and you're thirsty. This was to be a family get-together, unity around the table, united in our love for each other. But most of all, you feel lonely, unloved, like the black sheep of the family. To the left, you see people who are full, people having fun in fellowship. And you see that also to the right. But there in the center, empty stomach, starving for food, starving to be accepted, want to be treated as part of the family. And you sit there all evening, you and your family, and your sister with her four children, nothing to eat. And later, Grandpa stands up and gives a speech. You heard it 100 times before. He talks about how we are all one family. He tells how the founder of the Klan sacrificed everything to come to America so the family could be at peace and live in freedom. And he talked about the love of the founder and how we as a family are one and should love each other. And you are like, right. You call this love? You call this unity? You call this family? What hypocrisy of Grandpa. On one hand, to treat us like this, and then on the other hand, proclaim the oneness of the family. That picture of the dysfunctional family get-together is a little picture of the Corinth church family at their love feast. Paul lists two things that were present at the table. First of all, there were divisions. Verse 18. First, I hear that there are divisions among you when you meet at church. And to some extent, I believe it. And it's the divisions is the same word as used in chapter 1, verse 10, where he talks about that there be no divisions among you. And that I hear that there are some of you are of Paul and some of Apollos and some of Cephas and some of Christ. So can you picture the Corinth family at the Lord's table? Maybe to the right are camped those who lifted up Paul. And maybe to the left are those are camped those who lifted up Apollos. And to the back right are those who really into certain philosophy. And towards the back left are those who are more wealthy and had a lot more money. And each one is proud of their focus. You know, it's a wide open space at this table. I mean, you can see from one end of the table to the other. But there are so many walls that divide. Walls of favoritism, walls of pride, walls of spiritual superiority, walls of racism, walls of financial superiority. It's divisions at the table. The second thing present at the table is extremes in physical fulfillment. Verse 21, for in eating everyone taketh before other his own supper, and one is hungry, and another is drunk. The design at this Corinth family get-together, the Lord's design, was for everyone to bring food and drink and then wait on each other, eat together as a church family, sharing food and drink with one another. But we see that each party decided only those inside their intellectual walls could have their food or drink. Those outside their circles were excluded. And many of the excluded were poor in nature, and they could not afford to bring food. And so they sat there hungry, lonely, and brokenhearted. Also, it says they didn't tarry one for another. Those who got there early simply ate everything so that those who came later had nothing to eat. There was no waiting, no temperance, till the family all got there. For in eating every one taketh before other his own suffering. One is hungry, and one is drunken. Divisions at the table. Extremes in physical fulfillment at the table. We see at least five results of this sinful practice at Corinth. First of all, we see that the Lord's Supper was lost. You might say, well, Ray, they still ate. Sure, it was not quite like it should be, but it was still the Lord's Supper. And the answer is no, it wasn't. At Corinth, this doctrine was lost, even though it was being practiced. And it's a reminder to us that doctrine goes deeper than meets the eye. Something can be lost while it's still being practiced. They did not eat their own supper. Paul, what supper did they eat? Paul said they ate their own supper. Verse 21, when you come together therefore into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper, for in eating everyone taketh before other his own supper. You Corinthians, when the Lord had his supper, they ate in unity, they ate together, they bonded in love. What you're doing is no different when you eat in your home just to fill your stomachs. Your supper at home is all about meeting your own physical needs. What do you take your supper from home and you're eating it here in the church? Well, that's not the Lord's Supper. I thought of the illustration, like suppose I was on the Spring Grove High School basketball team. And suppose at home I would play basketball in my driveway and just pretend, it's going to really stretch imagination, pretend I could dunk the ball. No. Pretend I could take 30-foot shots, you know, and swish them every time. You know, I'm playing basketball. Now, suppose I showed up for the big game with my team, and I refuse to pass the ball to them. I take every shot. I try to defend all five players on the other team, and maybe I even convince the officials to start the game 15 minutes before my teammates show up. At school, would you say I'm playing Spring Grove basketball? Or would you say I'm playing my own basketball? Yeah, it's my own. The Corinthians, or at least some, that they did is they took their own selfishness, their own supper, to the Lord's Supper. For in eating, everyone taketh before other his own supper. It was not the Lord's Supper. It was not the Feast of Charity. It was their own supper transferred to church. And selfishness and the Lord's Supper do not get along. The second result of the divisions, you know, and the one hungry and one drunk, was it brought shame on the individuals who were hungry. Verse 22, what, have you not houses to eat and drink in, or despise you the church of God? And then shame them that have not. Ye shame them that have not. As I thought of shame, I thought about how when I went to school, sometimes we wanted to play an outside game. And two captains would be chosen, and they would pick teams from the lineup. So, you know, all the children, we would line up against the wall, and the two captains took turns picking. And everybody had the same thought as they stood in line. I don't want to be picked last. To be picked last is public humiliation. You know, it shows I have less value, less worth, that I'm really not wanted. And it's like, pick me. I don't want to be ashamed. At Corinth, that's where many of the believers were. As they saw the cliques eating together, as they sat there hungry, while their brothers or sisters were full, they felt publicly humiliated. You know, church is one place that we should be safe from shame. It's in Christ that there is no condemnation. Christ has freed us from the shame of guilt. The gathering of saints is to be a time of lifting of false guilt, lifting of false shame. But here the Corinthians heaped false shame upon other believers. What a shame. And the third result is, he says, you despise the church. You despise the church. If you were to get up some morning and find that someone put spray paint on your car, and you call another church member to tell them, and they say the same thing happened to them, and they said, well, it happened to a lot of members at Pleasant Hill. Their cars got spray painted last night. You would think, this isn't just about me. Someone must despise Pleasant Hill Church, since they are hurting members of Pleasant Hill. Someone must despise our church and what we stand for. That's what Paul is saying here. You're shaming members at Corinth? You're hurting them? Well, you must despise the church that they are members of. We hurt what we despise. We nurture and help what we love. It's like Paul is saying, what you are doing is so opposite the church mission, so against biblical principles, it's so against body dynamics. You must despise the church. We saw the division and lack of sharing of food caused the Lord's Supper to be lost, shame on individuals, despisement of the church. The fourth result is that things got worse. Verse 17. Now this I declare unto you, and I praise you not, that when you come together, not for the better, but for the worse. And here's a principle about our worship services in any culture, any time. They are always to be designed to make a person better in some aspect. Better as he worships the Lord, edified in his spirit, built up in character, strengthened with spiritual might. All worship services should make one better, especially the mountaintop experience of the Lord's feast, supper, and the communion. The principle of the worship service should make one better, but at Corinth, the church left in worse shape than they came. They left with hurts, left with feelings of bitterness and loneliness. As they didn't share their food, as they put these walls up around them, as they didn't wait, they were actually tearing down instead of building up. Things didn't get better. They got worse. The fifth result of their divisions and selfishness is they ate condemnation. I'm going to start at verse 24. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. After the same manner also he took the cup, and when he had supped, saying, this cup of the New Testament is my blood. This ye do as often you drink in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do show the Lord's death till he come. Therefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body of the blood and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. Verse 34, and if any man hunger, let him eat at home, that ye come not together unto condemnation. A couple words here. Verse 29 says, not discerning the Lord's body. The word discerning there. If a young man is discerning whether he wants to date a certain girl, it means he is judging her. Judging what her character is like. Examining who she is. Thinking about her goals. Thinking about her pursuits. He contemplates, discerns who she is at the core of her being. At Love Feast Communion, you discern the Lord's body. You think about his broken body and shed blood. You discern that it's all about selflessness. You judge he willingly shed his blood to make us one with him and each other. You contemplate how everything about Christ's sacrificial death was for you. You discern, examine, you judge his body. His blood. And you see all love and all mercy and grace, a selfless, kind action that has never been seen before. But verse 28 also says, let a man examine himself. It's really a comparison. Am I selfless like Christ was selfless? Am I thinking of the good of others like Christ was thinking of the good of others? Am I restoring relationships like Christ was restoring relationships? Am I free of bitterness like Christ was free of bitterness? Am I thinking of the unity of the body like Christ was thinking of the unity of the body? Do they match? For me to lift up in love the bread and the cup, for me to lift that up and yet be full of hatred and bitterness is lying and hypocrisy. How can I lift up everything Christ stands for when in my life I show symptoms of being anti-Christ? It's deceit, hypocrisy. It's treating Christ's body irreverently. That word in verse 27, the word unworthily, it actually means irreverently. You're tramping on his body. You're treating it with contempt. And the chastisement of God will come. As I examined the Corinthians, I wondered, what was the root issue in their lives? I think all of us, you know, as parents, or maybe your parents you're always parents, but even if they left. But as parents, you know, if your children had issues, you always wondered, what was the root issue? What's at the core of their problems? And I was thinking that about those at Corinth. Why were they selfish at the Lord's Supper? Why didn't they care about others? What was the root issue? A thought came to me, well, was it because they were imitating their pagan feasts? They had just come out, you know, of that idolatry before they were converted. And at their feasts, you know, people feasted and got drunk. Or was it maybe their lack of maturity? They had so much zeal, but they didn't have much grounding. Or was it because they had problems with doing things decently and in order in the church? You know, like Paul told them in chapter 14, you know, let everything be done decently and in order. Those things might come into play, but I don't know if that was the root cause. And as I examined them, I guess you could say I was examining myself, and I realized it was an issue in my life. And what I found, I realized, is an issue in every church, in every country, any culture that needs dealt with. And I believe the answer lies in the next two chapters. Because in chapter 12, we see that they had this great focus on spiritual gifts. The gifts were given to them at salvation, but they didn't use them to edify the body. They focused on themselves with the gifts. And I believe that some of them, they had pride about their zeal for gifts. I believe they felt they had it all together because of their emphasis on gifts. But Paul says to them in the last verse of chapter 12, but covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way. A more excellent way. And he continues in chapter 13, verses 1 to 3. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, I have the gift of tongues, and have not charity, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, the gift of faith, so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, the gift of giving. And though I give my body to be burned, and have not love, it profiteth me nothing. And then in verses 4 to 7, he lists 9 ingredients of love that were missing in this congregation. And these 9 ingredients, they are actually the same. If you compare them, they're the same as the fruit of the Spirit listed in Galatians 5. Why don't we read 1 Corinthians 13 together? Let's read verses 4 to 7 together. Just turn over a couple pages. 1 Corinthians 13, we're going to read verses 4 to 7 together. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. I believe this was a root issue. This is what they were lacking. They had the gifts, but they didn't have the fruit of love. They didn't have the gift. They had the gifts, but the fruit of the Spirit was gone. The gifts were easy. They had been given to them. But the hard part, growing in the fruit, they had neglected. They were lacking in fruit bearing. And at Corinth, they were proud of their so-called spiritual maturity. And you can see this coming out so often. Their pride in their maturity, proud of their gifts, proud of their spiritual focus. Yet there was quarreling, there was divisions, there was lawsuits, there was tolerance of immorality, there was not caring about others. Because they had the problem of not following the more excellent way, which is love. As we look at these fruit of love, could we examine our lives together this morning? Are you okay with that? The fruit are all manifestations of love. God is love. Christ showed his love through his death for us. Do we have that love? Or do we exhibit the opposite, which is the works of the flesh? If we are lacking in love, the works of the flesh will be there to fill the void. Exam number one. And we're just going to go over these quickly. Charity suffereth long. And that is the fruit of patience. The Corinthians could not even wait till the rest showed up to start eating. You know, patience and long suffering, it deals with individuals. A willingness to seek the best in them and work with them and continue to hope for the best in them. And Christ illustrated his long-suffering with us that he never gave up on us. He continued to pour himself into us, patiently waiting. Are we long-suffering with others and their faults? Do we expect immediate results? Do we become angry easily when they don't respond as quickly as we feel they should? Examine ourselves. Do we have the love that is patient with others? Or do we show anger and wrath and an unwillingness to wait? Exam number two, love is kind, the fruit of goodness. Kindness, goodness, is to have a loving response to every action and circumstance around us. As those at Corinth allowed others to be hungry, as they sued each other in court, as they divided into groups, this was not the fruit God expected. It was a selfish work of the flesh. That wasn't the kind of love Christ showed to them, the goodness and kindness. Where do we stand? Does goodness and kindness flow from our lives towards others? Do we seek the best, show concern, act on the behalf of others? Exam number three, love envieth not. Envy is an emotion that opposes something good happening in others' life. But love does not envy. Love wants others to be uplifted. Where are we? Are we glad when others get called to leadership? Are we glad when others have a job with more money than us? Are we glad if others might be blessed with more children than we have? Examine ourselves if we have this love of Christ inside us. Exam number four, love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. The fruit of meekness and humility. Those at Corinth, they were proud of their divisions they led, proud of their gifts, of their spiritual maturity. And Paul is saying, without love, you are nothing. Jesus gave his blood in humility, his body in humility. His blood was the giving of the most precious thing he had. In meekness, he came to earth. Philippians 2, verse 8 talks about that. And in meekness, he endured the cross and humiliation. And Christ gave his rights over to the Father. Not my will, but thine be done. Where are we in love? Do we consider others better than ourselves? Does our attitude toward others reflect the life and body of Christ? Does everything revolve around me and my rights? Or do I put the body first? How is our love? Exam number five, it doth not behave itself unseemly. And the word unseemly here could be translated rude. Love is not rude. Love is temperate in its actions towards others. At Corinth, they were not temperate with their appetites at the Lord's Supper. They behaved rudely to those around them. They could have waited patiently for the rest to come, but they had no control of self, and others were hurt. Where are we with our actions to others? Are they controlled? Are they weighed in the balance as to how it's going to affect others? Do we build up or tear down? You know, as you watch Jesus in the upper room, we see a man who controlled his actions for the benefit of others. Think of it. He had the agony of the cross in front of him. He had that bearing down on him. Yet every word he said, every action was for the benefit of the disciples. He was never rude, even in the shadow of the cross. Where are we in our treatment of others? Rude or edifying? Out of control or temperate? How is our love? Exam number six, seeketh not her own. And this one phrase describes all the fruit of love, what love is. Because love is selflessness. Paul said in verse 24, and when he had given thanks, he brake it and said, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. Notice it was broken for you. The bread and the cup symbolize the most selfless action that ever happened. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. As we discern the Lord's body, his selflessness, what do we see as we examine our lives? Is it all about Ray Mummer? Is it all about you? I thought of the aspect, you know, how the moon revolves around the earth. And all the planets then revolve around the sun, the largest body in our solar system. The sun is the center of the solar system. And with us, the flesh, we want to be the sun. We want everything to revolve around us, to look at us, to focus on us. We want everyone, we want to be the center of everybody's lives. But Christ says, not so. Whosoever is the least is the greatest. Love others, put them at the center of your universe. For us tonight to lift up the sacrifice of Christ in one hand, but yet have a heart that is selfish and thinketh our own, that is to treat that sacrifice irreverently and with contempt, and will bring chastisement. As I thought of it, it would kind of be like me. If I had the heart of a soldier, and I would have been out on the war field, enjoy killing the enemy, and then for me to appear, to come to an anti-war protest and be talking peace, peace, peace. Here I am, I enjoy killing. but I am now at a meeting that is against killing. They don't go together. Having hatred in our hearts and then come here and lift up the symbols of love do not go together. Do we have the sacrificial, selfless heart of Christ? Exam number 7 is not easily provoked. The fruit of peace. His broken body and shed blood tore down the walls between us and God. Ephesians 2 verse 14, for he is our peace, who hath made both one and hath broken down the middle wall. His blood made it a fact that we are one. We are united in Christ. The Corinthians did not follow Christ's example. Fighting over ministers, over philosophies, going to court. They did not grow the fruit of peace. Are you at peace? Or do you have walls up? Are you full of contentions? Combative, quarrelsome, full of bitterness and hatred? Don't eat condemnation. Get the offense taken care of. Lay them down. Seek peace, unity. Exam number 8, thinketh no evil. And that is the fruit of faithfulness. To believe in your brother or sister. To have faith, trust in them. To believe in their abilities. To trust their motives. To not doubt their character. Do we have the fruit of faithfulness? Do we see the best in each other? Are we full of mistrust, doubt, cynicism of their motives, full of condemnation, having a critical spirit of others? You know, the power of the blood. It's not human to think the way of trust and love. It's not natural. But his broken body and shed blood, as we let it live in us, gives us this supernatural power and perspective of love. The last exam, verses 6 and 7. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. And here we see the fruit of joy. A person filled with joy will rejoice as others advance in the faith. They joyfully bear all trials. They rejoice at good news about others. They are filled with hope in others' potentials. They joyfully endure all things. Joy in criticism. Joy in reproach. Joy in life and in death. Do we have that joy? I'd like to close with these thoughts. I think you could all agree with me that Satan had no love in him. Do you agree with that? Christ is all love. Do you agree with that? Satan had no love. Christ was all love. For us to come together tonight, bearing the image of Satan, hatred, selfishness in our hearts, and then use our hands to lift up the divine emblems that represent love and selfishness. That's a dangerous thing. What do I need to change? What do you need to change? Who do we need to call this afternoon? Why do we continue in bitterness when there is peace to be pursued with your brother and your sister? May God bless each of us. None of us is perfect in love. I reviewed my life in these areas and I see how I failed so many times. We can come tonight if we're not perfect in love. We won't be perfect in love till we get to heaven. None of us are perfect. But if there is hatred, if there is the works of the flesh, if there is bitterness and unconfessed sin, it needs made right before you come tonight. May God bless each of us as we continue to examine our hearts before the Lord.
In a moment, we will kneel for prayer. If you feel led by the Spirit to share your heart audibly, I will pause for a short time to allow you to do that. And this time, we will ask that all who are able, that you would kneel for prayer.